You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Card.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave in the playoffs, just like the Packers. Green Bay defeats the Washington professional football team 35-18. They advance to play at Arizona next Saturday night, 7:15 p.m. Lambeau Field time on the National Broadcasting Company. Dave, what were your thoughts when the Packers came out and promptly fell behind 11-0 and gained like 11 yards in the first quarter? What were you thinking at that point?
I was thinking this is the same old stuff we've seen for 10 weeks now,
exactly.
And yeah. This is hitting the low point, and I just wanted to get the game over with. I think I had family sort of stop through, let them come in and sit down and talk. I think my daughter talked about homework or something, and that was okay, because I'm just watching this. This is a run the clock out situation for me. And then it turned it, and it's, I don't quite understand why it turned, which is, I guess, something we'll explore here. But I can't say I was more down than I've been in the past, because it was exactly what I expected.
Right.
But then it turned for the better.
You know, I'm watching a recording of the game right now. There's 2 minutes to go in the first quarter. Packers behind 5-0. It was like the third inning, apparently. And I can't believe how long that first quarter was. It seemed to last forever. They were playing so bad. They had made no progress. I mean, there was a couple of things. The ha-ha Clinton Dix not giving up on that pass to DeSean Jackson and pushing him out of bounds. And that, was a four-point play, as it turned out. That saved the Packers 4 points. And then later on, Washington's going to score a touchdown, and then they missed the extra point. So to make it – 11-0 is not good, but, it easily could have been 16-0. And, for as bad as it was and as disappointing as it was, to have those things kind of work in their favor – I wasn't completely given up on it at that point, just because some things had gone in their favor. And I was thinking, let's just wait and see here. And then for some reason, and I'm not exactly sure why, things just began going their way in the second quarter. And really, Dave, from the second quarter on, it was pretty much a one-sided domination. I mean, the Packers, went, 35-7 from the second quarter to the end of the game. I mean, that was pretty much domination.
Yeah, I can't figure out if the turn was that the offensive line kind of pulled it together, because early there was the safety that I thought, Shredder, J.C. Shredder,
yeah, I mean, he
is going
up,
to have.
Yeah,
he's going to have a very rough time out there. So that game over, I thought, for that point. But I'm watching series after series after the second quarter and thinking, I'm not hearing anything about the offensive line. And I think Rodgers was staying in the pocket and throwing on time and on rhythm, and it looked like receivers were kind of making decisive cuts on the field, so they looked like they were relatively open. There's one play where it's like 3rd and 2, and James Jones ran 3 yards and turned around, and they threw him for first down. He was almost wide open, and I couldn't understand what I was seeing. It was such a bizarre scene of seeing James Jones open on a third down play. So I couldn't figure out if it's the Packers started doing something right. You know, I think a lot of people have been saying that's when they kind of went away from the huddle offense and kind of turned it loose and went to the no huddle offense and kind of played more aggressive. I think it certainly could have been that. I think it also is that the Washington Redskins defense is not very good.
Right.
And I think their scheme for what they played against the Packers was pretty dumb, except, and I don't know much about Redskins therapy. I probably shouldn't say Redskins, but I can't. It's their name, so forgive me for the rest of this podcast.
The Washington professional football team.
I'm not going to say professional football team that resides in Washington, D.C. But I had heard that their cornerbacks, that they had a number of guys hurt, that they were down to, I think they said they had a guy that they just signed to the team. So I don't think they felt comfortable playing man-to-man up close
because
I think they were afraid of getting burned over the top. And that opened up everything that the Packers like to do. And then the running game started, and then it just sort of then got into more of a virtuous cycle, except the other way around. And I think that's great. I think the Packers played a team that was offensively not as good as I think they had played last 4 weeks, and defensively were struggling too, and the Packers hit them just at the right time. And it's funny how momentum can make the same team better than, you know, the opposite can make you that much worse. I mean, it's a huge spread, I think, when you are smiling and hitting people and, you know, going after the other quarterback. You know, you just, everything is easier and better. So if the main reason is that the Redskins were not very good and they kind of were exposed as the game went on, then that's great. We won the game. It was an enjoyable game to watch. I had a lot of fun watching it, but I don't feel great about the Arizona game.
No, and we will definitely talk about that more as we go along here. But our friend Mike from Ashwaubenon rewatched the entire game today, and he sent me a tweet in which he mentioned he was watching exclusively the play of the defensive backs for the Redskins, or as we like to say, the Washington professional football team.
Yeah.
And he noticed that they were playing soft. And you mentioned it now, too, in your comments. And I think that was a big reason why the Packers were able to kind of find some traction, because they were exploiting what Washington was giving them. And I think the reason they were able to do it more from the second quarter on is because, you know, they went with a lot more muddle huddle and no huddle. They were just playing at a faster tempo. They caught Washington a couple of times with 12 men on the field. Their defense, I think, became a little more tentative. I think that helped the pass rush stay off of Rodgers a bit, and the softness on the defensive backs, I mean, it just allowed them to play a lot better. And I think Rodgers, the rest of the game from the second quarter on, I think it was 20 of 28, I think, from the second quarter on. So while he had a pretty good game, I mean, he had a 93.5 passer rating, but I think from the second quarter on, I didn't figure this out, but I would imagine his passer rating from the second quarter on was, you know, probably over 100. And I think a lot of it had to do with playing a defense that was a little shorthanded, not necessarily as talented, and the Packers also scheming, doing a good job with the quickness and the tempo of their offense. But as you kind of alluded to, I mean, that was great for this week. I don't think they can count on the same thing when they go and they play the Cardinals in Glendale this week coming up. I don't think we'll see that. It worked fine, though, on Sunday. And let's face it, hey, a win is a win. And I think it's a playoff win. You got to like that. You get to advance and play one more week. So it's all good. I want to minimize a playoff win. It is good. But I think it's important. You know, this is Packers therapy, after all. And part of therapy is understanding the reality of things. And the reality of things is, yes, this was a nice win. But, you know, it was a nice win over a team that was 9-7 and had not beaten a team with a winning record all season.
You know, for Washington, for me, it held no emotion in terms of I want to beat this team until I saw the Kirk Cousins, you know, you like that?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
Simple?
Yeah.
When I started to see that and they were making a thing about it and they were in the towels, then all of a sudden sort of felt that drive to want to pound them into the turf, which is what we did. And I didn't think Kirk Cousins played very well. I was thinking, boy, I would love to have those wash receivers as our receivers.
Man.
I think if we were to end that tight end, you know, if we could trade.
That tight end was pretty good. I mean, I've seen, watching the playoffs, I've seen better tight ends. But, yeah, I definitely take that guy on my team. No
yeah,
question.
I think if we were able to switch position players, I think we'd do pretty well to have those guys.
Yeah.
But, they fell apart. And I thought the turning point was the drive where we drew them off sides when they were doing the substitution. I felt like that put Washington kind of on their heels a bit. And it also, I thought it gave a boost to Rodgers in sort of, I think he likes playing that mental game.
Yeah.
I think he likes to be smarter than everybody else on the field. And look what I can do. When he did it the first time, I felt, so this is maybe a topic to discuss. I thought that was very successful. I thought it helped and sort of gave them a spark. But I thought at times that his trying to draw guys off sides and trying to hurry up when they're substituting and then throwing, you know, 60 yards down the field every time they get a guy off sides. I feel like that stuff is fine, but I feel like it's sort of getting in the way of a rhythm offense, you know, like getting things in sync. Like these are gimmicky things that he likes to do because he's doing it. And, you know, I think he's, you know, getting guys to jump offside with his hard count. It's like all these things he's doing, which is great, but he's not concentrating on getting guys involved, you know, getting in a rhythm. And so sometimes I felt like that stuff has not been as beneficial. That sort of distracts from the main point, which is having a good offense. But in this case, you know, I think it was the one thing that finally worked. And, you know, and then it provided a spark and the rest of it followed. But have you ever felt that you felt, yeah, I'm glad he's a smart guy and he can do it and all that. But I think it can sometimes be too much or be too much of a focus for him.
Well, you know, it's hard to know if it's too much, but I do know when he gets the opportunity, he does tend to like to, you know, throw it downfield. And not that that's a bad idea, necessarily. It is a free play. But, you know, I mean, you could take advantage of the free play by, you know,
getting 20
exactly,
yards or 10,
exactly,
right?
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
right.
You get a first down then. And I think in this particular instance, they were fairly close to the end zone, and he did take advantage of it and, you know, threw it into a tight window for a touchdown. That was a really good use of a free play, I thought. I think it's sort of a default move, or it's become a default move for him that he's just going to, you know, throw the heck out of it and just throw it down the field, and that seems to be what they do. But I think this worked, I want to say equally as well, but it worked maybe better because they were able to score on it. And it was maybe better that they didn't have, you know, a long field in front of them, that they could throw it into the end zone and get points out of it. So, yeah,
right.
That was all right. I think that was fine, and they caught him twice that way, and they made good use of it. So I forgot what they do on the other one. I think they also have a reception on that play. I'm not sure, but they made good use of it twice though. And
this is the offs when they jumped,
or
the substitution.
The 12 men. Yeah. I think one time they were offsides and 12 men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
well, fault Washington. I mean, the second time it happened, they weren't paying attention. You know, that was the first time I can understand. The second time, you could see that guy slowly getting over to the sidelines, and I guess it's fairly effective. I mean, if you're going to substitute and try and put your best defense on the field, and this is a way of stopping you from doing that, then, you know, that gives us an advantage. And if you're going to be slow about it, all the better. But I just feel like that's a lot of his focus. And I feel like the bomb down the field on the offside is almost just guaranteeing you're just going to get 5 yards because you don't have a deep guy that's going to go up and get the ball, maybe get an offensive or a defensive pass interference at best. But, you know, if you had Jordy, that'd be one thing, but
right.
Don't. So I feel like I've kind of mixed emotions about it. In this game, I thought those two plays, it happened on the same drive, right? Didn't it?
Oh, boy, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure on that. It seems like they happened within the same quarter, but I'm not sure if they happened within the same drive.
Okay, well, it certainly, I felt, was part of the turning point for the offense, and and maybe the rest of the offense kind of gets jacked up about when it happens. Like they feel like, yay, we got one. I think it's something that I just will wonder when it doesn't happen, then what do they have left? And I think Arizona's going to be – they played Packers already. I think you're going to play the very tight coverage on our
wide receiver. Jam them on the line, yep, for sure.
The one safety deep. And now I still am hoping that they're going to come out with an offense some week here where they're going to do a lot of crossing patterns where they're going, you know, you can have two receivers cross and try and get the defenders sort of run into each other, quick slants, you know, all that stuff that would be effective against a tight coverage. But they continue not to go that route. You know, they're playing the offense that they want to play.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how they come out because they, you know, they will know. They saw what? It was just a couple weeks ago now that they saw the Cardinals. And so they will know exactly what to expect this weekend. And how they respond to it will be very interesting to see if they don't come up with a wrinkle or two in the offense. I think this week against Washington, I think it helped that they were able – not just, you know, that they, you know, did a lot of runs. They had 32 running. Well, I guess you could say maybe like 31 because one of those was Rodgers carrying. But 31 actual rushing attempts. And I don't think it was the number. I mean, they were effectively able to run the ball. They had a 4.4-yard average. They had a couple of long runs. They had a 30, a 22. They had a 9. So it wasn't just the fact that they were committed to running the ball. It was that they were having success running the ball. And when they can mix that in there and make those, you know, as good as a short pass, I think that really helped the offense get going too. And part of the reason that they were able to run the ball, I think, is because after a while, I think Washington wasn't able to substitute the kind of guys they wanted to. They had to play, you know, defense with their nickel guys on the field or dime guys on the field, much easier to run against that than if they were able to substitute and bring in their run stuffers.
Although, you know, the run was effective, but they've got to stop running Randall Cobb. That guy's going to get killed.
I don't like that either. He ran five times, 24 yards. He ran okay, but I don't like him taking all of those hits. And yeah. I know why they put him in the backfield. I know why they give him the ball, because if you don't, then they know it's going to be a pass. But the price is that this guy's taken a lot of hits. A $10 million taking a lot of hits and a small guy that you just don't want to see. I mean, he's what, 5'10 and 195? I mean, he's not a big guy. And I just don't like to see him, you know, run from that position. Even though I know they have to do it to make that formation work, I just don't like to see it.
No, and someone made the comment he's not wearing enough pads. And that's true. I think he's playing wide receiver pads, which
I
are
think,
you know,
Gary,
light.
Gary Ellerson mentioned that, yeah, in the postgame show, that he's not padded up like you would be if you were James Starks or Eddie Lacy.
Right, right. And it's true. I mean, when he gets hit, I feel like I can feel it. And I feel like one of these times he's going to not get up because he's going to – something's going to roll over or he's going to concuss himself. Or, you know, if a huge linebacker comes through and cracks him, then, you know, that's the – it's very much of a season over. As bad as he's playing, we certainly need him. I just am surprised they're exposing him to that as much as they are.
You know, do you think that J.C. Treader at left tackle, now I know you had a brush with greatness
yes.
You know, during the game, and you commented you thought he had played well, and what, his sister and his dad both, did they favorite you or did they retweet you, your comments about Treader? What was that?
Yeah, so that is a kind of a bizarre, the world is getting smaller moment. But, yeah, I think late in the game I saw a pass play, and I saw Treader one-on-one keeping his guy off to the side, and I thought, hey, I forgot. He's playing left tackle. I haven't heard him in for a while. So I tweeted something that, you know, Treader is really holding his own out there, and that's, I think, part of the reason the offense is doing so well. And it was a favorite by – have to look
Robert
it up.
Treader was one, right? And I forget his sister's name. Who she identifies herself on Twitter as being the sister, a Cornell grad and sister of number 73, J.C. Treader. But I'm assuming that the Robert Treader is their dad. assuming.
Yeah, it's certainly the I would think so. The picture at least looks like that. So that was like, wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Unless they just favorited every single mention of Treader, because by the time it got to the end of the game, actually they never really talked about it on the telecast, but you know, the post game show, I think pretty much the unanimous MVP candidate was J.C. Treader. I don't know if he played great. I don't know if he pancaked guys, but he didn't give up, you know, a sack after sack like Barclay or, you know, even I think he played much better than Sitton.
Well, here's my theory, okay? And I think, again, like we've been talking about the past few weeks, I mean, it's a system that all works together. And if the defense is playing off a little bit, that means you can throw quicker. And when you throw quicker, you don't need your offensive linemen, you know, to hold their blocks quite as long. And so as a result, Rodgers is able to get the ball out faster. He's not taking sacks. The linemen don't have to block that long. The receivers can get open. And it's all because I think they didn't get a lot of press coverage from Washington. I mean, I think everything was made to look better because of that decision. And I see why Washington did it. I mean, they did have injuries and they were playing with guys they probably didn't want to necessarily have out on the field. When you have those guys, you make compromises and you play off the receivers, and that played right in the Green Bay's hands.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be much tougher to play against Carolina and Arizona. They know what they need to do. I don't think that they're scared at all. But I think J.C. Treader certainly could be given an MVP vote for the game, because when he gave up the safety, I mean, at that point, I just felt, you know, look at him. He's light. He can't take a bull rush from this guy. Our receivers are not getting open, so we need as much time as possible. All this is just a bad combination. And then it just went away. You're right. It might have been that the rhythm of the passing game was that much faster, but I did see a couple plays where I thought Treader engaged his guy one-on-one and held his own, and that's going to be critical against Arizona. I don't know if the status of Bakhtiari, if he's going to come back or not, but you know, it's going to be critical to be able to hold that our tackles are going to have to play well in order for us to win.
Well, the thing about Bakhtiari coming back, I mean, it's obviously a significant injury. If he's missed three games in a row, you wonder, you know, is he going to be 80%, 75% when he comes back? And are you better off, you know, playing 100% of J.C. Treader or 75% of David Bakhtiari? And it's unclear to me which is a better option, but either way, you know, you're going to be probably limited against a really good pass rush. I mean, a pass rush that racked up 9 sacks the last time they played the Packers.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, 80% Bakhtiari, even if he's – I'm sure the 80% Bakhtiari would get beat quite a bit, but also he would give up a lot of holding penalties.
Yeah.
And that kills drives. And you know, I don't recall in the – you know, when they were doing well, that there was these penalties that was giving you 2nd and 20, which, you know, Bakhtiari gets a few holding, you know, every game. And J.C. Treader didn't do that. So it's going to be a really good question. I don't know if J.C. Treader can hold up against what Arizona's got. But is it Dwight Freeney that gave us such a hard time? I mean, the thing about Dwight Freeney is that he's not a huge guy, right?
Nope.
Very quick. And Treader is a lighter guy, maybe a little bit quicker on his feet. Certainly I don't want Sitton out on the left tackle against a Dwight Freeney kind of a rusher, because he can't move. Maybe Treader would be a good offset to a quicker outside rusher, rather than, you know, like a you know, a Julius Peppers type that could, you know, bull rush you right into the quarterback. So maybe that would work out well.
Well, we're going to find out, I think, because they haven't really said a lot about Bakhtiari. I mean, it's not like, well, you know, he was ready to play this week, but we're, you know, we wanted to play the high side of caution, you know. You just kind of get the idea as though he's just not ready, and that he's not getting ready anytime soon. Same thing with Sam Shields. I mean, that's a huge injury too, because in this game they lost Quentin Rollins, who I thought played real well. He went out with a quadricep injury, a thigh injury of some sort. And then you also had a couple of plays or a couple times You had Randall go out, 24 left. I think he came back each time, but, you know, he was obviously shaken up, and I don't think he was quite right. You need Sam Shields back, because otherwise then you're playing with Gunter was out there. And
who played well.
Yeah, well, he had one pass defensed, but that was questionable in terms of whether it was, you know, was he clean getting that play or not. But, you know, he was beaten by a couple of steps, and this is a guy who came out of college with, 4.56 in the 40. I mean, he's slow as defensive backs go. And then the other option is Dimitri Goodson, which is not a great option at all. So you're really in tough shape at cornerback if Rollins can't go and if Shields can't go and you have a nicked up Randall. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, again, great win, but, you know, there was some costs involved with this win, and you wonder what kind of team they're going to be able to field against Arizona.
Yeah, I didn't hear much about the defensive backs. My impression as I was watching the game, though, was this is what a Packer defense would look like if you had a lead. Because I think when I see a Mike Neal and Nick Perry rushing the passer well, I don't know if Dayton Jones got home, but Mike Daniels, Peppers play great. Obviously, Clay Matthews is a great rusher. I mean, they have four or five guys that they rotate through that can rush the passer much better than previous years where I felt like we're never getting home, right? We would talk about that a lot other than Clay Matthews. So I think they can rush the passer. And I think on the coverage side, I think when Rollins was playing and Randall's okay, and certainly if we get Shields back, I think on the back end, I think we're pretty good. So of all the years to have your offense crap out, it had to be where your defense actually was playing pretty well, because like you think of in 2011 where we went 15-1, but other offense, we get leads, but the other offenses would have, you know, these lights out numbers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd win 40-28, but the other team would have these like great stats on offense. I think this defense with an offense that could give you a 2-score lead would actually be pretty darn good. And it's been wasted on a really bad offense this year. And you think next year you're going to lose probably Nick Perry or Mike Neal. You know, you're going to lose some guys, so you're not going to have the same defense. So it's such a shame that we didn't get an in-sync team mm-hmm. that was really good. And you know, special teams, too. I think our special teams, it's pretty solid this year. You know, I don't know if they would be top 10 special teams, but Janis has been effective. You know, we haven't had returns on us left and right. I mean, it's been more a rarity than a regular thing like it was in years past. You know, so defense special teams was definitely an uptick, I think, this year, and the offense was 3 or 4 ticks down, which is just a shame that that's happened.
Yeah, that is one of the frustrating things, you know, when you have a great offense and your defense is, you know, bottom half of the league or worse. This year's defense with not even just the 2011 offense, but even last year's offense, you know, probably, yeah, you know,
yeah.
I don't know if you win the Super Bowl, but you probably make it, you know. The defense did get better, I think, as it went on last year. But this year's defense has been very solid. You know, probably the Bears game was the first game of the year, they did not play that well, I thought. But after that, I mean, the second game, I think, was against Seattle, and they were very good. And they've been pretty consistently good every game of this season after that kind of shaky start against Chicago. So that defense with an offense from a year ago or a few years before that.
Pick one.
Yeah, you know, but unfortunately this is a year where, you know, the offense is a bottom half offense, and that's probably not going to be enough to get it done next week. But it is a lot to celebrate in terms of, you know, winning the playoff game. They did beat beyond Shredder. Davante Adams, I mean, he showed a little bit of life. And of course, then he goes and gets himself hurt.
Yeah, that's right.
It makes you wonder, is this guy snake bit? I mean, he begins to kind of show something. You know, he gets a few catches. He breaks a couple of tackles. He's starting to look like, you know, a guy who's really a legitimate threat. You know, he has a touchdown catch. I think he had 4 for the game. So he was a solid factor in the game. And then he winds up getting hurt. And it just, you know, I'm not sure if it's if it's just one of those things where it's never going to come together for him in Green Bay just because the timing is bad, or if we're going to have to, you know, be patient. And yes, by his fourth year, his contract year, you know, he'll be great, and then they'll have that decision. Well, you know, is the real Davante Adams the one that you see most recently, or is it the one that struggled in the first couple of years? It always seems to work that way for the Packers, but Adams in particular, he just seems to be under a cloud.
And of all people, Richard Rodgers is the one who fell on him and hurt his knee. You know, it's like those two
so
bumbling
fluky.
Idiots.
So fluky, yeah.
Well, it's like those two are the poster childs for children for the bad offense this year. Is their disappointing second year is something that I'll sort of stick and remember. And he's the one who hurt Adams. I think Adams, but even with some of the catches, he never catches the ball super clean.
Right. Yeah.
He's just not a smooth catcher. And I'm sure that part of that is just in his head. And, you know, if he scored a touchdown, got four catches as the game went on, I wonder if he would be more confident, catch the ball with more, catch it cleaner. He's pretty dangerous, I think, with the ball. I mean, he's pretty elusive. He's big. You could kind of see maybe a little bit of what they thought they saw in him. But you're right. He's kind of like one of those guys that's like a coach killer kind of guy. Looks good in practice and in the game. He just falls down on you, drops the key pass. Here in this case, you know, he gets hurt just as he's kind of getting it together. So.
Yeah, you know, Nick Perry seems like he's the defensive equivalent in lots of ways of Davante Adams. He had a couple of sacks in this game, and, you know, he had one really nice move against a good left tackle and kind of ducked under. You know, it wasn't just his typical bull rush, and he made one of his sacks. But, of course, you know, this is his last year. And this is maybe a salary drive for him. I'm just wondering if that's not going to be the story of Davante Adams, is that, you know, he's going to kind of be like Nick Perry. He's going to kind of find it. He's going to make some impact plays. And then they're going to have a decision, you know, what to do with this guy, like they're going to have with Nick Perry. I mean, is this the kind of guy, you know, do you want to bring him back? I mean, he's been injured. He's been ineffective. But now he seems to kind of be getting it together. And there have been glimpses earlier this season. Of course, then he got hurt again. But earlier in the season where he was an impact player and he was doing some really good things. So he seems to be kind of in that same, you know, same mold as Davante Adams, in that you wonder, you know, who's the real guy and is he worth making a longer-term investment in?
It's tough to know. You know, it's his body of work is very thin. And, you know, you love to have an outside rusher who looks really good, you know, and that can make the moves that he made and have the impact that he had. Mike Neal, same way. I thought Mike Neal looked really tough. But these are two guys that have consistently disappointed, either by being injured or not showing up. And the defense played with particular fire. I mean, I think Julius Peppers, too, I thought was playing down after down, giving the kind of effort that you expect to see from him. He's not taking plays off. And did you notice that Peppers was the captain, defensive captain, for the game?
I did not see that, no.
I saw the when they did the coin flip, I think it was Rodgers and Peppers, and then it was Crosby and I forget who the other special teams person was. But, man, the defense really looks up to him.
he told, you know, during the Seattle game and the interception, he's the guy waving to get down, you know.
Yeah. Someone tweeted, like, this is going to be the game's over or something. They said something, unless Julius Peppers tells them to lay down again.
Yeah, I know.
I'll never forgive him for that. Why do we bring that up? It's just poking ourselves in the eye. But I thought he played really, really active. He did.
I thought he was really, really good. You know, and you mentioned Mike Neal. I thought Mike Neal was good. I'm watching a recording of the tape of the game right now, and recording of the tape doesn't make any sense. But I'm watching a recording of the game, and here's Mike Neal making that strip sack and then recovering the fumble too at the same time. This is a tough one. Now, they're both in contract years, both he and Perry. Who do you resign? I mean, I think if given the choice, I'd probably go with Mike Neal. I think he's been more of a consistent player. Believe it or not, given all the injuries he had early in his career, I think he's been on the field more regularly than Nick Perry has been. I'd probably go that way, even though I think he's a year or two older. He's kind of figured out how to play linebacker. And let's face it, I mean, the guy with the shaved head and the beard is looking really good on the sidelines, too.
Yeah, well, B.J. Raji, I thought, you know, had week in, week out, we'll have a play where he just cannot be blocked and gets into the backfield and makes a good play. You know, they've got a good defensive line rotating right now. It's like, I wish you kind of hold this group together one more year and see how they could do with a good offense. But you can see why maybe our defense is on the uptick and our offense is on the downtick, because Ted has focused a lot of his drafts, you know, trying to build up this defense because the offense was basically fine.
Right. Exactly.
So this is kind of coming together. Big part of it is that Randall and Rollins, you know, being able to have those guys step in and not be just an absolute, cancer on this team by giving up pass after pass. You know, they played so well. That I think it's allowed this defense to be pretty good. But, again, against Arizona, they can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They throw quickly. They've got good tight ends, good receivers. Arizona is going to be a tough test for them.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about that. I'm obviously, going to talk more about that as we go forward here. But I just think that the best part of this win is that it sort of, and in some cases maybe too much, but it gives a sense of hope again. And when it just seems so dark and so hopeless and, you know, a lot of people picking against the Packers, I didn't really think that they were going to win. I just thought that they were a lost and broken team. And like you said about the first quarter, like, yeah, let's kind of get this thing over with. Why belabor it? It's just too hard to watch this. And now all of a sudden, because of those last three quarters, is just a reason to believe again. There's hope again. And I know some people are going to go, like on the post-game show, they're going to read so much into this and say, yep, it's all solved, and it's the arrow's pointing straight up, and we're going to go beat Arizona, and then we're going to go beat either Carolina or Seattle. It could be Seattle at home. Imagine that.
Yeah,
it'd be something.
After all this, if we have one win away of – somehow getting the planets to line up, one win away from hosting the NFC Championship after all the stuff that we've gone through.
Hey, I think Seattle could definitely beat Carolina.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they got lucky against Minnesota. I mean, Seattle's got some freaky good – now, I know they didn't have good luck in the Super Bowl last year with, you know, the interception at the goal line, but they've had some freaky good luck. And, you know, I mean, beyond missing the field goal – that Russell Wilson, and the ball goes over his left shoulder and he runs back. Most quarterbacks, I mean, 90% of them fall on that ball. But, you know, he picks it up. He's got four guys in his face. And not only does he elude those guys, he finds somebody wide open in the middle of the field who then runs at another 25 yards. I mean, that's just absolutely nuts. And then they get Adrian Peterson to fumble. I mean, and then missing a field goal
that
field
goal
shorter missed than an extra point. Oh, my God. I mean, they got lucky against the Packers. They got lucky again. This is just a part of their profile, it seems like. It's who the Seahawks are. That lucky seems to be their thing. And I guess, hey, you'd rather be lucky than good, right? I mean, that's, you know, luck covers up a lot of deficiencies, and it certainly seemed to be the case. On the other hand, Dave, I never get tired of seeing an excruciating defeat by the Vikings.
I have to say, I felt bad. I saw that missed field goal, and I could almost feel the shockwaves of disappointment coming from Minnesota. I actually felt bad about it. I don't know. I mean, there is a point after the Favre interception against the Saints, Morton Anderson missing the extra or the field goal
Gary Anderson.
Against
it's Gary Anderson.
Oh yeah, there's a Morton somewhere, but yeah, Gary. They lost – how many – they lost four Super Bowls?
Yes, I mean, only four in the Super Bowl. Yeah.
You talk to a Minnesota fan and you ask them –
there's a lot
of
pain.
Oh, lots of pain. Lots and lots of pain. I mean, there are people who have stopped, I think, watching because they just can't take it anymore. And could you imagine being a fan, sitting out in that 3-degree below zero weather and then watching that absolute mess. I guess it's no different than when the Packers lost to the Giants a couple times. That was amazing. I couldn't believe that happened, and I feel so bad for that kicker. And I actually feel bad for Minnesota fans. I feel like Randy Moss is far enough in my rearview mirror that I actually felt really bad for them.
Did you hear the Paul Allen call?
Yes.
Oh, Schadenfreude. It was spectacular.
Yeah. That is really funny. Hey, should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break, and we'll on the backside here, we'll talk a little bit about the Packers' next playoff game, the divisional round of the playoffs, when they're going to go to the desert, play in Glendale, at the University of Phoenix Stadium, the Cardinals and the Packers this Saturday. We'll talk about that more on Packers Therapy with Chris and Dave. Give us a chance, take a break, and we'll be right back at you. Chris and Dave are back with Packers Therapy. Let's wrap up a couple of thoughts yet on the Packers' victory over the Redskins, taking a 35-18 playoff victory, wild card round playoff victory. Dave, what does it say when Aaron Rodgers can play what feels like a really good game and his passer rating is below 100? I mean, for a long time, it seemed that
He fell into 130, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, he would throw up the passer rating of, you know, 128, 130, 117, 140, whatever. And it would be like, yeah, that's just Aaron, you know. And now it's been so long, and he plays like he did, and it's under 100, but it feels so much better. You know, we've become so accustomed just in 10 weeks or so to the guy being mortal. I mean, What is that telling us that a 93 passer rating suddenly seems special when, you know, a season ago 130 didn't seem that special?
Well, I think when they were so high, you know, well above the hundreds, he was throwing for 3 or 4 touchdowns probably, and here he had just 2,
yeah.
And he had 15 incompletions, which that also is pretty rare.
Right.
And isn't the average per attempt
right?
A factor in
yep.
the quarterback rating
yep.
too.
And
so,
he
I mean, that
10
is,
yards passing.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, normally he could be on upper 300. So I look at he had 21 catches, which is and 2 touchdowns and no interceptions. I feel like that's got to be 100. But when you kind of look at some of the other things, yeah, 210 is not that great.
It
I mean, Kirk Cousins.
Like it felt like there was more yardage, didn't it?
It did. I mean, they ran the ball a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they ran for 141.
Yeah.
But Kirk Cousins, who I thought had a pretty awful
yeah,
game.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
For 329
yeah,
yards.
Yeah.
I mean, over 100 yards more than what Rodgers did. That would not have been apparent to me when the game was over. If you asked me who threw for more yards, who would have a better quarterback rating.
Well, Rodgers did have a better rating by a couple of points.
I would have thought it would have been,
yeah.
you know,
well, it's probably
20
because
points,
he had 2 touchdowns instead of the 1. That's probably why. But it felt like he was a lot better than that, and it felt like Cousins wasn't. And maybe that just kind of goes to show you that, you know, how things look and how they feel, not necessarily the reality.
yeah. He certainly played better. It was great to see him smiling.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It looked like there was a, you know, the interaction between he and McCarthy that was good, you know, good-natured. You know, we haven't talked a lot about the conflict between McCarthy and Rodgers that it must be apparent. It's certainly being talked about a lot on the news and, you know, Jason Wilde, you know, kind of the insider. And I thought, I don't know if you had heard Josh Sitton's interview where they asked him, you know, is there something going on between McCarthy and Rodgers? And he's like, you know, there's always stuff going on with this team, with teams, you know, every year is a little bit different. But then I think he said, but yeah, there is something going. I mean, he definitely did not say he generalized it or denied it. He kind of basically said, yeah, it's. But then I think he attributed to when you lose, that's what happens, which is fair.
Right.
It was great to see Rodgers, you know, smiling. You know, he's quite the leader when they're winning, going around shaking guys' hands. You know, being Mr. Nice Guy, you know, he seems to do a very good job when they're winning. Although I did see at the beginning of the game, I saw him talking to Davante Adams and kind of in a pump up what seemed like conversation. So maybe there's a lot more going on that we just never see. But I thought it was very good to see him in the way he's playing, the nature he's playing. If he, the looser he plays, I think the much better he plays.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, just from watching his demeanor, actually the past 2 weeks, he really does seem to be trying to be more positive. Now, he was a little chippy with the media afterwards. I can't say I totally blame him. But during the game, though, he was on his best behavior. I mean, there wasn't that disgusted, chin strap unsnapping sort of thing that we see or him, rolling his eyes or getting in someone's face or, the exasperated, there didn't seem to be any of that. And I don't know if it was conscious on his part or the fact that things, after the first quarter had, gone so well. But definitely, I mean, this was the best body language and best seemingly obvious attitude that we've seen from Rodgers in a real long time. I mean, even in the games that they won, with the exception probably of the Detroit game at Detroit with the Hail Mary where he was excited, even in the games where they've won, like at Oakland, he just didn't seem to really have the same kind of joy that we've associated with some of his past performances.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's going to be important. And I think he's going to need to play looser, have that swagger back, to play better against Arizona. We'll see. I mean, I wonder if Adams is going to play. Are we down to Jones, Cobb, and Abadaris? Who, I like Abadaris a lot, being the Wisconsin guy that he is, but I don't think he's really NFL ready, especially a playoff ready. That's going to be a huge challenge for them if they don't have Devontae Adams. Which reminds me of an article, speaking of, lack of backup talent, it reminds me of an article you sent me that Bob McGinn wrote about Ted Thompson. I want to make sure we mention that. Is now a good time, or do you have other things to talk about?
Well, there was one thing we can maybe touch on just briefly because, again, I'm watching the replay of the game. Did you have any thoughts about the clock management at the end of the first half? Packers on defense with about 2.5 minutes to go. They called two timeouts before the two-minute warning. They forced a punt, and then they got the ball back and were able to score a touchdown inside of 2 minutes. Now, I was noticing this at the time that this was going on, and I liked what they did. Now, my son, who was watching the game with me, thought they were taking a big risk because if Washington gets a first down, Packers have chewed up their timeouts, and they have no way to stop the clock then inside of 2 minutes. As it was, though, I mean, I got to give them a lot of credit. I mean, they trusted their defense. They used their timeouts. They got the ball back before the two-minute warning, and they got a big score before the half was up. I thought that was excellent clock management. I just, so often people complain about that sort of thing, the old clock management guy thing. And I think this was a case of, they took a risk and it worked out. And I think it, should be acknowledged that they did things maybe a little differently than some people would have. And the results were great.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. It was a very good move. I mean, they went into halftime up 17-11.
Right.
And, then when Washington scored right out of the break, they're only up by one. That was a huge part of the game. I didn't really think about that. And as I looked at the play series, the first play, it wasn't like it was a -7 on first down, so that it was easy to call a timeout. It was a gain of 3, a pass for 5, and then it was incomplete. So it was a risk worth taking, but I think it's a risk that you take when you're a good team. And I think they have to, in some cases, assume that they're a good team and do some of those things. So I don't know if I would have done that. I might have. I guess there was how much time? There was 2:54.
Right.
2:31 when they called the first timeout and they had the 2 minute warning. I got to give them credit. I don't know if I would have thought to do that. I certainly, when they did it, I thought that's interesting, and then it worked out. But I think that's a very fair comment. We should give praise to McCarthy when things work out.
Yeah, it was just one of those things that, had it not gone that way, in other words, had Washington somehow, gotten the first down on third down and the Packers had blown through their timeouts, and then Washington then, probably is in a position to maybe score again. That was I thought a big thing in the game, getting the ball back and being able to score before the half, because Washington came out and had the ball to start the second half.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's you hear nobody talking about it. When had it gone the other way, you would have heard a lot.
Yeah, we'd all complained.
Exactly.
Right.
You know. Anyway, so that said, you want to mention about the Bob McAssat article, and I would be very curious to hear your thoughts on it. We have a writer who wrote a very long email commenting on this, but I'd like to hear what your thoughts are.
Well, I read it, and I don't think I have perfect recall of the whole article, but I feel like McGinn will often kind of take jabs at Ted Thompson.
Yes.
But I don't feel like McGinn is a headhunter his whole career. I don't feel like he's always gone after. I think he's been hard but fair. I know, like, in 2010, I think he predicted, like, he thought this team is hitting it at the right time. They're going to win the Super Bowl. They're gonna run the table. They're going to do it. So I think he's got good instincts and seems to be close to the team or have sort of a good pulse on the team. And he does all the I know scouts, and he talks to scouts, and he gets kind of what seems like insider information. But he's much more of an insider than, say, we are. But at the same time, I know you don't really care for him because he seems to take unfair shots.
Well, I think what he does is he sets up the straw men. I mean, it's exactly what you said. In 2010, oh, yeah, this is a team that's hitting it just right, and they should win the Super Bowl. Now, if they don't win the Super Bowl, he can come back and say, you know, this is a team that disappointed because everything was set up perfectly for them and they should have won. If they do win the Super Bowl, it's like, yep, see, I told you, you know. So it's really kind of a no-lose proposition for him. And he does this again. And like he wrote just before Rodgers got hurt in 2013 that the Packers would be just fine without Rodgers. Well, he could then say after they weren't just fine without Rodgers – that, you know, see, they have every advantage. They should have been just fine. But yet this is an example of how, you know, they don't have the right personnel. They don't have the right coaching. It gives them a reason to be critical.
Media.
And if they do well, though, then he can say, well, see, I was out ahead of this. I said they would be just fine without Aaron Rodgers, and damn if they weren't.
Yeah, I guess all media has that. As you're saying that, I was thinking of that reporter from The Natural, where it's either you're going to win, I'm going to have a great story, you're going to lose, I'm going to have a great story, right? It's on the media.
That's right.
I can do with
except I don't think Bob McGinn has one of those cameras with the big flash bulb.
Yeah. I love that movie.
I know.
Anyway.
It is a good movie. Wonder Boy.
But his article is, yeah, wonderful. His article basically said that Ted Thompson has sat on his hands all year this year, not just so much criticizing, I thought, although I think he has in the past, his quality of drafts have been not as solid. You know, he's gotten a few home runs, but, you know, hasn't been everything, you know, to build the team the way it should. But he in particular took sort of offense that he did nothing this year when tackles, you know, when the offensive lineman went down, when the wide receiver went down, he went out and got James Jones, but there are other people out there that were available. And he sort of mentions a number of other teams and their moves, including Dwight Freeney, who was available. But I guess he wouldn't be a person that they necessarily needed. But he went through a number of examples of people that were available out there that Ted just never did. All he does is when someone's down, you take someone out to practice squad and you elevate them up and they're supposed to play. And he felt that is one of the reasons our season has kind of gone south is that Ted Thompson's inability to sort of take a risk and do something other than just draft and develop. Did I kind of capture that all correctly?
I think it's true. But then, of course, he was the same guy then who wrote in his story after the game, with Rodgers superbly directing Coach Mike McCarthy's well-conceived and persistent design and play calls, the Packers marched for four touchdowns and a field goal in their final three possessions of the first half and their first two possessions of the second half. Yeah, so, I mean,
that's not fair.
He plays it both ways, where he's critical about how everything has gone to hell in a handbasket, but yet, you know, when they do well, he's like, you know, overwhelmingly praiseworthy. Now, what I'm going to say, and I will admit that I didn't write a lot of this, and some of this is maybe a little tedious, but I will make an overarching statement first. I agree that it's a good idea in season if you can pick up some players, but I think it's good if you can picking up players that aren't going to cost you draft choices down the line. And what I mean by that is, you know, when Howard Green was cut in 2010, and the Packers, I think the Jets cut him, the Packers picked him up.
Right.
They were having trouble stopping the run. They got Green, and suddenly it made an immense difference in their run defense. And then if you recall in the Super Bowl, you know, he was the guy that hit Roethlisberger's arm and caused a fluttering pass. Nick Collins intercepts and runs it back for a touchdown. I mean, you know, yeah, great acquisition, but it didn't cost you draft choices. If you can find guys who are kind of out there and available and you don't have to give up draft choices, I think that's something that they should be looking to do when they can. A lot of what McGinn said in the article was that, you know, on September 16th, the Cowboys agreed to swap 5th and 6th round picks with the Raiders for wide receiver Bryce Butler. Butler missed 8 games with a hamstring injury, but the Cowboys were intrigued by his vertical stretch and catching 12 passes for 258 yards. Now, the thing is, and again, I did not do the analysis on this. My son did the analysis on this, and he notes that the Cowboys, you know, traded 2 picks for 2 years of Bryce Butler, which means that the Cowboys gave up 8 years of controllable salary on players for 2 years of a particular guy. Now, if you're trading 2 picks, they signed a rookie contract. Those are 4-year contracts each, so that's 8 years of salary-controlled players for a guy, you know, 2 years, who wound up, you know, having an injury. And he went on to talk about the same thing that the Patriots trading a 5th-round pick to the Texans for a wide receiver. But he had 24 catches. He averaged 11.2 yards, okay? The one that really sticks in my craw, though, is how he holds up. On November 3rd, the Broncos traded 2 6th-round picks to the 49ers for Vernon Davis, okay? And Davis is 31. He wound up getting 20 catches for 201 yards, a 10.3 average. They've already got a tight end that did pretty much exactly that all season long. They didn't have to give up a couple of picks. Moreover, the word is that in the conference, the 49ers wanted more for in-conference teams rather than out-of-conference teams, which means that the Packers have to give up more than 2 6th-round picks for a player who's over the hill. I mean, it's easy to look back at that. I don't think Vernon Davis is going to – he's not that good. He's averaged 2 catches a game and 10 yards a catch for the Broncos. I don't see where all of these things that he has mentioned, these haven't been like transformational kinds of players. They've been just guys that they've exchanged for draft choices that they're going to be able to control as they go forward. I think that's how you get into these slumps. The Packers have made the playoffs 7 years in a row for a reason. And I think a major reason is that they have managed the salary cap very well, and they have drafted pretty well. Now, that doesn't mean that you...
two Hall of Fame quarterbacks back to
back. Well, of course. But you have to put talent around those guys. It's not enough just to have, as we've seen this season. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a heck of a quarterback. I'm glad the Packers have him. But even having him on the field isn't enough to guarantee that you're going to, you know, be a juggernaut. You have to have guys around him. And they've, you know, been able to rebuild their defense largely, well, definitely because of the draft, because they don't sign anybody else. Now, that's not to say that, you know, they shouldn't use free agency. I think they probably should, including in the season. They should find guys, you know, off the street more. But I don't think it's a good idea to give up draft choices, because that's who you're relying on to restock your roster down the line. I also think free agency in the off season, I don't think you should go after the high profile big ticket guys. I think those are the guys you should be picking up to look to fill in depth. You know, your number six offensive lineman, you know, so you're not going with a Josh Walker, you know.
Right.
You have a credible guy that you can throw off, a Bruce Wilkerson kind of guy. And I my memory's not 100% clear, but I think Bruce Wilkerson was on the street when they picked him up. Didn't they have Tootie Robbins too? I mean, guys like that,
that you can
pick up, you can fill a spot, you know, a depth spot. So when John Michaels doesn't work out or when somebody gets injured, you have somebody credible to put in there. And that's my criticism of Ted, is that he hasn't used free agency to assist with depth, and he hasn't used it in the season. He has, as was mentioned in the article, promoted from the practice squad when maybe they could have found somebody who, again, there aren't world beaters. I mean, they're on the street for a reason, but they're more credible than what you have. A lot of the guys in the practice squad are on the practice squad for a reason. They're not quite ready to play yet in the NFL. And when you promote them to the roster and you're looking for Joe Thomas to be, you know, a guy that can play your dime linebacker, I don't think Joe Thomas is really ready to do that. He's been kind of underwhelming. It, you know, would have been better if you could find a more credible solution to that. So, yes, there is some truth, I think, in what McGinn says. But using this idea of these trades that were made for drafters, I think those are reckless because they haven't really gotten – these teams haven't gotten a lot of value from them, but they've given up draft choices, which are so valuable when it comes to rebuilding a team, restocking a team, staying under the salary cap, and being in the playoffs competitively year after year after year.
Well, I do question your premise. The Packers have been in the playoffs year after year after year because Ted Thompson's system works. I don't know if you can – if you take away – if he wouldn't have – if Aaron Rodgers wouldn't have dropped to him, you know, would he – you'd still be saying that. I mean, he had Brett Favre, and he was given Brett Favre, and he got Rodgers. I mean, Rodgers fell, and he went ahead and took him. And so when you play with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks back-to-back, you know, you're going to have a lot of winning seasons. Now, should they have won a number of Super Bowls with a little bit different approach? That's the question I have. So I just – whenever I see other people that I think aren't as irrational as I am take pot shots at Ted Thompson, I think that's right. That's how I feel. I feel that he's missing depth like you talked about. I think he's missing leadership in the locker room is another. And I think there's a lot of troubled players who don't pan out well in New York or Miami who come to Green Bay and with the winning sort of attitude and history and turn their sort of careers around. I think that is something that Green Bay can give to someone, just like St. Louis seems to do for baseball players all up and down. You know, these free agents come in and are average at best, and they have these career years. I think Green Bay could pull a lot of talent out of guys that – because you know they're focused in Green Bay, it's not as much distractions. So I think he misses out on that potential opportunity, and I think that is a shame that we don't have another wide receiver option on this team that could help stretch the field, rather than elevate Janis, who they don't trust and they never play.
He's a good Nabedaris, special teams player, though.
Well, of course he can be on the team for special teams, but he's your fifth wide receiver, and yet they never use him. And then Aberderis is their fourth, and he clearly does not seem ready. And then, you know, they went out and got James Jones, who's I think would be a fine four, but not a one or a two or whatever he's playing right now.
Well,
so,
yeah, but he had the most yards and most receptions, I think, this season, right?
Probably, because for a number of games, that back shoulder throw is the only thing that was working.
Yeah.
One of these times, I think the back shoulder throw is going to go back for a touchdown.
You know, I don't think Rodgers has ever thrown a pick six. I don't think
ever?
He has. Yeah, I mean, with the Packers. I mean, maybe he did it at Butte Community College.
Yeah, I don't know his. I don't know if he's ever. But that's. I think that is a potential that someone is going to stay close to him. All of a sudden, they're going to turn, and they'll be right to them.
Yep. I mean, that's kind of – I mean, when Al Harris had that pick six against Seattle in the playoffs in 2003, I think that was a back shoulder gone awry. So yeah, I mean that's a recipe. But I would be curious, and maybe some of our listeners might have the handle on this. But I believe Rodgers had never thrown a pick six in the NFL. I think he almost did to Brian Urlacher.
Yeah, Urlacher. I was just going to
say that. But I think Rodgers made the tackle on that play. He tripped him up. So
he's fumbled for touchdowns, which
seems to be a regular occurrence.
Yeah, Arizona.
Sadly, yes. I mean, at Arizona, he's done it three times now at Arizona, right? Once.
Is that right?
And then twice in that game. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Crazy.
That's unbelievable.
Well, do we want to? Well, we don't talk any more about Arizona before we get to the email and the betting lines and all that other stuff.
We can talk about Arizona through the betting lines, I think.
Let's do it that way. Let's get the betting lines out there, but we have to clean up first off what happened this week. So what did Mike send us?
Well, it's scandalous this week. We have a scandal brewing in the Packers Therapy.
Are we going to jail, or is Mike going to jail?
Let me tell you what's happening. So we had a number of players, people play, and we have a tie. So someone picked the same total score of 41. So the winners this week who get to share.
It was 51, right? It was 35 to 18. That would be 51.
Oh, my. We might have 50, another.
53.
Yeah, that's not. Wait, what is the total score?
35 plus 18.
Total score sum. Yes, that is 53.
Yeah, 53.
We're going to have a what does he have?
You know, the school system in Durand, Wisconsin, apparently, the Duke of Durand, apparently what's the problem here now?
Is all right. Well, I have originally the two winners was Judy Freeman and Dr. Klaus.
Which is Tom Freeman's lovely spouse. Tom our who handles our West Coast legal matters for Packers Therapy.
Yeah, that's correct. And Dr. Klaus.
Who's our team physician, yeah.
Yeah. So they were going to share, but I'm going to overrule unless I have this incorrect. I have the correct answer is 53, and I have someone who picked 51, and that is that's going to be the winner. So the winner here is actually Tom Freeman kicking his wife out of the casino.
Well,
Take it back. I see what's happened here. So the first. All right, let me back up. I'm going to erase all of this.
Don't
I'm
you have,
sorry.
Like, a graduate degree or something and all the
all right,
numbers?
Hold on.
And
Mike, I hope Mike doesn't kill me for this. All right,
Duke
there are four people, four people who got five correct.
Four people got five correct. Okay, good.
The two that got the tiebreaker closest of those was Judy Freeman and Dr. Klaus. So, Tom, you are back out of the hotel. Mike is correct. Judy and Dr. Klaus now have the keys to the room and can do what they will. One of the people who got five correct was me, which is a rare occurrence.
Because you're usually terrible at this stuff.
I know. I am terrible. Well, let me go through what they were.
Okay.
The first one was Aaron Rodgers quarterback rating. You said the line was 84, and it was 93.5. So everybody picked the over on that one.
All right. All right.
And then Cousins quarterback rating. You set the line at 95, and he was at 91.7. So the under.
A much better effort on my part, I thought, yeah.
Yes. The number of carries by Eddie Lacy, you said 16.5. It was 12, so the under is ones on that one. Clay Matthews sacks, you set the line at 1, and he had 1.5 sacks.
Well done, Chris.
Green Bay turnovers versus Washington turnovers. There's some debate whether what that actually meant was that a turnover, like a good thing? Did they get a turnover or did they give a turnover? Well, it ended up being a push at 0. So one person actually said push, so they won that, but everyone else got that wrong because they put over and under. Pepper's tackles, because I thought this was going to be his last game. You set the line at 3. He had 2. And starting left tackle, no one had Treader.
I'm surprised. I'm still surprised that they put Treader out there because he just isn't built like a left tackle in the NFL.
No, but
left Bakhtiari, the Ivy League.
We talked about it. I mean, we thought that might be a better option. Did we talk about that last week?
I don't know. I can't remember what we talked about at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, I don't remember either. And I certainly don't know how to interpret these. Mike, you're going to have to, like, literally write it out for me. So four people got it right and five correct. Judy Freeman and Dr. Klaus were the closest on the tiebreaker, which is what tiebreaker means. So that is this week's lines. Are you ready for Arizona?
I am definitely ready. I'm ready to get the controversy behind us. Maybe we could do a little simpler and cleaner lines to help out our buddy Mike.
All right. Well, the Duke of Durand. These are all pretty straightforward.
Okay.
You should apologize for insulting his education because he was actually right.
I'll insult your education. Wheaton College? My God.
That's much fair.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the same line as the Arizona game a few weeks ago because a lot of these still apply. Number one is the same thing, which is just really interesting, is Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating again.
Okay. Now, I have a very dark and dismal view, and you know, we were talking about this bits and pieces during the podcast earlier. I think Arizona is going to play one high safety. They're going to play tight bump and run coverage, you know, jamming coverage. I think Packers are going to have a hard time getting open. And I think it's going to be kind of a dismal performance for Aaron Rodgers. And I'm going to set the passer rating for Aaron Rodgers, 79.
Oh, man.
79.
Yep. Well, I got to take the over.
Okay. All right.
Number two, yep. Eddie Lacy rushing yards.
Okay. You know, I don't remember how many yards he had last time. I remember they were pretty buttoned down, as I recall. And Lacy, I know he had a 30-yard run. He seems like he's leaving more yards on the field in recent games, in the last, say, month or 6 weeks. I know he's had some 100-yard games, but he doesn't seem to be getting all that's there all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure if that's, you know, I know it's fashionable to say he's fat and all that kind of stuff. I'm not really sure what the reason is, but he doesn't seem to be getting everything that's there. So I'm going to put his yardage at 54.
54. I'm going to take the over on that one, too.
I'm assuming, so optimistic.
Yeah, isn't that?
Who's the crazy, wild-eyed optimist?
Well, I'll get to the end with my thoughts.
They're going to get crushed, Dave. They're going to get humiliated. Well, no, I don't want to say humiliated. I'm not going to say boat raced. They are going to get decisively beaten.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's keep going. Okay. Number three, how many rushing yards will Arizona as a team, including their quarterback if he runs, how many rushing yards as a team will Arizona have?
Well, it's funny you should mention that because I'm just watching Kirk Cousins' quarterback draw his way into the end zone here. Rushing yardage. I'm more concerned about the passing yardage because they've got a good quarterback, as stationary as he is. They have good receivers. I'm going to put their rushing yardage as a team at 106.
106. I'm going to take the over on that one.
Okay.
Green Bay, number four, how many drops will Green Bay have? So Mike's going to have to kind of pay attention to this one. How many drops will Green Bay have? Because at the time we had this, they were having a lot of drops. I know Aperderis had one this week. I don't know if that.
So this is in Mike's judgment now. This is not like we're not going to refer to Stats Inc. or any of these half-assed, services, not Bob McGinn, not any of this. Okay.
I'll leave it up to Mike.
This is up to Mittenmiller, right? Okay.
Yep.
All right. So Mike makes the call on this, and you know, I'm a harsher judge though than some on these. I think NFL guys should be making more play. You know, I mean, the ball hits them in the hands, they should be making a play. Did you see that Doug Baldwin catch, by the way, in the Seattle game?
I did see. It was a one-handed,
fully extended. Oh, God, I mean, that's exactly what Devontae Adams doesn't do. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry for the digression. How many drops for the Packers? I think I'm going to set the line at that at 3.5.
3.5. All right, I'm going to take the under on that one. I think they show up a little bit in this game.
Good.
Number five, how many catches will a Green Bay tight end catch this game?
Now, This is the total of all tight end catches?
Yes. So this could include Rodgers and
this is like
the other tight ends that they have.
So this
Corliss.
Corliss and yep. And Perillo.
Perillo.
Does this include Bubba Franks, Marv Fleming,
Ed West?
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Ron Kramer. We'll throw him out there as well.
Paul Kaufman.
Paul Kaufman, of course. Yeah. I'm going to say, boy, they've kind of gone away from Richard Rodgers, although he catches one for a first down as I say that. I'm going to set that number at 4.5.
4.5. I'm going to take the under.
Okay.
On that one. Number six, again, well, maybe these aren't as easy to interpret. Before the game, what quarter during halftime will they show the Aaron Rodgers face mask play?
Are you sure you want to do that?
All right, we'll scratch
that one. Scratch that one.
We've done that a lot this year.
Yeah.
Number six will be how many times do you think Aaron Rodgers will get sacked?
Oh, no. It was 8 last time, 9 as a team. I don't think it's going to be that bad this time. Mainly because I think they're going to be carting Rodgers off after about the 6th one, so I don't think he'll get sacked. So this is just the Rodgers sacks. This isn't when Tolzien comes in to relieve him.
Right. Okay. It's just Rodgers. So you have to interpret the whole story.
I think he will get sacked. I'm going to put that at 4.5.
All right. I'm taking the over on that one.
Right.
We'll just leave it at 6 this week. And the tiebreaker will
the total points or something? Or?
All right, we'll do number 7 will be total score combined since I did so well the last time. Total score combined, what do you think?
I will give you what I think, but this doesn't count in the betting line. I mean, this is everyone can put what they want down because this is the tiebreaker, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So you just want to know what I think because what do I think? I think the Packers will – like I said, it'll be a sound beating, but it won't be the disaster that we saw last time, which was 38-8, and that math would show 46 points. I wouldn't be surprised, again, to see 46 points. I think that's probably a good estimate, but I think it will be a closer game, much more like, 28-17. I understand that's 45, but it'd be something like that. It'd be like a 28-17 kind of game. So let's set it at 45.
45. Yeah. All right. I'm going to take the over because I actually think where you're coming from too. I think it's going to be. I think the Arizona's going to be in the lead the whole game. I think it's never going to really be in doubt, but I think it's going to be a much closer game.
It'll be a more competitive game, is what I'm trying to say. I think that's what Rodgers said too. I don't think it's going to be embarrassing and humiliating, but it will be a clear Arizona win.
I mean, it really came down, I think, where the wheels came off is when people got injured. Bulaga was one, and then it really – it just fell apart, right? Or Bakhtiari, he got hurt as well, right? Did they both go down that game?
And yes.
The two tackles?
Bulaga went down, I think, in the third quarter, and I don't think Bakhtiari – Played,
yeah. So yeah. Barclay was just in, yeah. So that's when I remember the game being a complete disgrace.
Yeah,
and if you can keep that line together, then I think you're going
to
have a game that's much more competitive. But I think it's going to be an easy Arizona victory. So the tiebreaker is number of reception yards by James Jones. He had 81 against Washington. I don't think it's going to be even close to that. So I'm going to say 45 would be my guess for the tiebreaker.
So the tiebreaker is not total points, but the tiebreaker is James Jones'
total reception
total
yards.
Total yards receiving James Jones, and that is the tiebreaker, but we are going to do total points as an over-under. I said 45.
You said 45.
And you went over on it?
I did over. Right. Okay. Yeah, I think it's going to be more. I think it could be. I think the Packers could score 20, which means if Arizona is going to score probably 30, so I think you're going to get into the 50s.
I don't see that. I mean, I'm just watching Devontae Adams get hurt here again.
That's true. I'm going to stick with my. Yeah. I'm going to stick with my first.
You know, and I'm watching 27 stumble and bumble his way. Although 44 ran pretty well, though. He looked pretty good. So, well, anyway, those are the betting lines. You want to participate with us? We have is this our first female winner? We have Tom Freeman's wife, who's, I'm sorry, I forget her first name now.
Judy.
So Judy and Dr. Klaus. Dr. Klaus is a handsome man, and he specializes in women's health. So, Tom, I would be concerned about this. But they will enjoy the luxury and the comfort and those thick terry cloth robes that we have in the presidential suite of the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. That, of course, is on the Strip in Durand, Wisconsin, where Mike Miller is tabulating the results of the betting lines. If you want to play, if you want to participate in the betting lines, we hope that you will. We have a lot of people, about a dozen a week now, I guess, who are playing the betting lines with us. The way you do it is you send an email with your predictions and your picks to Mike Miller. You can get him at mitnomiller@gmail.com. Once again, mitnomiller@gmail.com. That is how you get to Mike Miller. Send him your picks. He does the tabulations, which we routinely screw up on this end, but that makes it fun. And we will see who gets to lodge. And, you know, it's big because you get to be the whole offseason. If the Packers lose, the winners of the Lions get the entire offseason in the presidential suite.
Yeah, we should keep track of who that is.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Well, we had some email back. We had a lot of email, a lot of tweets this week, a lot of traffic. We appreciate hearing from so many people. First off, though, we want to acknowledge that our man from Apple, Chuck P., was at the game. I believe he brought his lovely bride with him. They sent a wonderful picture to us. I think Chuck said his mom or his mother-in-law, I forget which, is a seamstress, and so came up with some kind of inventive Packer Washington mashup kind of jerseys for Mr. and Mrs. P. Went to the game, and also at that game was our very own military attaché himself, Captain Dave, was also at the game. So those guys enjoyed not RFK, it's FedEx Field, and they enjoyed the game. So we had a couple of Packer fans, I guess quite a few Packer fans, really. Packers travel well. So they were in touch and told us about their experiences at the game. Also heard from our guy Ryan, who's usually a Brewer correspondent. Of course, Mike from Ashwaubenon, frequently in touch, along with Jack and Greg X Smith. Rusty in touch with us on a regular basis. Our guy Chief Tom, who – did you see Chief Tom, who's in the Navy? You can sail the seven seas in the Navy, I understand. At least what the village people told us. He got posted to Japan. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah. He's in the process of moving now.
So Chief Tom is moving to the Orient, posting to Tokyo. You know, he's the guy who went cross country when he was getting his posting to the East Coast and listened to the entire 2014 season of Packers Therapy. All the podcasts, back to back. We did like 20 of these a season. Listen to them all, drive me across. And the man is still sane.
Yeah, he's closer to the button than, you know, all the rest of us, which is really a scary thought.
Not close to my button, Dave. Chief, we appreciate you listening to us and enduring us. And, I hope things go well for you in Tokyo. Who else was in touch with us? A lot of other folks here. I want to make sure I recognize Tom Freeman, Judy's husband. Tom, of course, is a loser. Judy, a winner. Tom in touch with us a couple of different times. We appreciate that. And we appreciate everyone who listens, even if you don't correspond with us or hit us on Twitter. We really do appreciate that you enjoy the podcast. And we do see the download stats, and they are very good and very healthy at PackersTalk.com, and we're very grateful for that. We just got a tweet right now from Mike Mikowski. In fact, he sent us three tweets right in a row. And Richard, again, in touch with us, and Pastor Kevin in touch. Logan, as he so often is, in touch with us. And again, Jack hitting us on Twitter, and Chris Redich, Clint, and all kinds of people in touch with us. Thanks for being correspondents at Packers Therapy and also sending the emails. It's good to hear from all you guys. And couple of the women too, but mainly guys, and we're appreciative for all of that. So, Dave, any pop culture? I know we were going to spend some time, and maybe we can do that next time around with our picks for 2014. I don't know if you want to
go into that. Oh, that's right. Yeah, but we're getting late tonight. Yeah. We'll have to hold it. Last year we did it where we did our top 10 pop culture things of 2015, and let's do that another time.
Right.
I do have one for you to look at in 2016.
Great.
Is I marathoned pretty much in 2 days because on a whim I had heard that this Netflix series Master of None with
Aziz.
I don't know how to say his last name, but
Aziz
he was
Ansari.
Sorry, yeah. I'll take your word for it. He was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Actor in a Comedy Series.
It's better than being nominated for a Golden Shower, Dave.
That's true. I watched the first episode. Just I heard it was good. I saw that it was nominated. I thought, I don't like sitcoms. I'm going to watch it. And I couldn't. I just watched one right after another. I just really. It's like a Seinfeld where you take out all the sarcasm and you sort of substitute kind of this earnest cultural sort of part of it. But it was just a really a lot of fun. I didn't find it was like ha-ha funny, but I smiled the whole time I watched it.
Where was your hand? You said you were smiling the whole time.
What's wrong?
I don't know what's wrong.
Master of None.
Master of None?
I would highly recommend if you like Seinfeld and something more current than that. It was great. So I really, really loved it.
I have just added it to my list of TV shows to watch, which looks like it's about a dozen right now. And so I have added that to my list, Master of None. And you have now completed watching Making a Murderer, I assume.
No, I have a few more episodes to go.
Okay.
So don't spoil it.
All right. Well, I did send you that mashup of The Bachelor and Making a Murderer. But no, this is a pop culture thing. I think I'll throw this out there, and I've sent these to you from time to time. I really enjoy McSweeney's Internet Tendency. It's a website that generally is devoted to literature and more serious kinds of reviews, but they also do regular daily kind of comedy stuff. And it's usually for people that are, 25 years younger than I am, but still I like to read it. It's funny. I recommend that you go to it and you find their short comedy stuff that they put in there pretty much every day. McSweeney's Internet Tendency, that's what it is. Go to the internet, check it out, find it. There is some very good stuff there, and I do recommend that.
All right. That sounds good.
All right. So next week, assuming it will be our last week of Packers therapy for the year, we don't know that. We hope it isn't, but looking like it might be as the Packers have to face the Cardinals, we will have our Pop Culture 2015. We will have a year in review. We will go over all that stuff. So we'll talk more about that then. I'm hoping, Dave, though, that maybe, just maybe, the Packers surprise us and they somehow find a way to win that game and the Seahawks find a way to win at Carolina and we have the NFC Championship game at Lambeau Field. I mean, that would be absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that I can't even wrap my brain around that. I can't picture what a victory would look like next week. But the only problem with that would be is to lose to Seattle in a Fail Mary attempt or Hail Mary or an onside kick that goes awry. We would expose ourselves to having that happen at Lambeau Field. That would not be good. That could kill me.
That would not be positive.
No,
there's no doubt
it would
about
not.
That.
But I'd love the chance.
The possibility is out there. Hope has been restored. Packers season extends by another week. Makes it feel better to be a Packer fan. So my advice, my therapy for you, Dave, and for all the people that listen, the 3,100 people that download this podcast every week, just enjoy this. We have a bonus week of football. A lot of people, me included, thought we wouldn't have this week. So let's enjoy it. Let's read all the articles. Let's understand there's only 8 teams left playing. It's the middle of January. We still have a football team to follow. that's good, regardless of how the game comes out. Let's just enjoy the build-up, try to enjoy the game the best way that we can. And if you can do that this week, I think Dave and I will come back next week and we'll do another podcast.
Sounds good.
All right. If you're up for it, Dave, I am too. Packers will play in the desert again against the Arizona Cardinals Saturday, not Sunday, Saturday, 7:15 p.m. Lambeau Field time. We will be back to talk about it a week from now. But until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.